Welcome to Pacific Beer Chat. I'm Mike,
Josh,
and Craig,
and we're here at Torchlight Brewing in Nelson. I was here for your grand opening. When was that again?
That was 2017. Yeah, June 2017.
Yeah, for this bigger building. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And, oh, sorry. Yeah, for your current location. And you just had your fifth anniversary party.
Yes.
Can you just tell me a little bit about what happened at the party?
What happened at the party?
Well, you know, just so you know. You brought out a beer for it.
Yeah. So starting last year, we started the tradition of running an annual anniversary beer. So we did a fourth anniversary last year, and then for this party this year, we did a fifth anniversary beer, which is a raw Norwegian Maltalkvik.
I'll let
Craig describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a Kvik beer. So we'll use Kvik yeast. It's a traditional like Norwegian farmhouse ale or a maltal. It's the O with the slash through it.
Yes. That's how you say it.
I think. Anyway, that's what I'm trying. Yeah, it seems like a really fun bit to do where you wanted to try these the Kvikis for a while, and I was curious about what those beers were really made, or that yeast was really made into the beers. So, because you see a lot of IPAs and a lot of like modern-style beers using Kvik yeast, but that's not what they obviously were brewing in the farmhouses in Norway, right? So I like did a little digging on the internet and checked it out, and found some really cool stuff. And so we made this beer, and it was the weirdest beer we've ever made here. Like, it's every process is like how not to do it for the way we normally make beer.
Yeah.
We actually got to use our original mash tun, because as you were talking about, this is our second location.
Yeah.
When we opened in 2014, we had a tiny little 4-hack brewery just up the road from where we are now, just a hole in the wall spot, which was great. So we kept some of the equipment, so we still had the mash tun, so I used that to do the mash in, and instead of putting the hops in the boil, because this is a raw ale, you actually do like a juniper and spruce branch, and we actually end up infusing the hops into the sparge water, so the water before you put it with the grain, which is totally backwards.
Yeah.
And then we just like let it sit super hot, and then we just start taking the wort off the tank, so pulling all the liquid out, and we're just dumping it through the hatch on the fermenter. Like, usually we put it in the boil kettle and you cool it down and you use pumps and everything to do it all properly. We're just pouring it in with buckets and
that's awesome.
I'm stirring it with a paddle to cool it down with the cooling jackets on the tank and just dump the yeast in and then let it rip. And that was the Thursday before our anniversary party. So this thing was fermented out over the weekend, kegged, carbonated, bottled, ready to go by the next Saturday. Super fast.
Shit.
Just crazy, this beer.
Yeah, we couldn't believe how fast it was.
Yeah, why not plan in advance, right? Oh, shit, we need that anniversary beer. Let's do Kvik yeast.
Well, it's fast, right?
Like, yeah.
So actually, like, I left it late on purpose just to like make sure it was ready like at the right time so we could get it fresh. Because we're going to it's super limited release. We only did like a 4-hectoliter batch, like our original brew size.
Yeah.
So there was a couple hundred bottles, 100 of which were all pre-sold to good friends of the brewery, and 100 of which were up for sale, just a few kegs to have on tap here. But I'm sure a couple will get left aged, and we'll probably keep one or two just to try it in a while.
Yeah, for
normally
sure.
These things are drunk fresh, apparently, but I wonder what they're like after a few months or a year or two in the bottle.
Better find out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's hope they don't go too wild or something.
Hey, who knows? They might. That's part of the fun.
We have a set of space for those kind of bottles.
good to hear. So I haven't been here in a while. You seem to have some kind of events you hold during the week. You were telling me off-air about your karaoke night. What are kind of some of the things you do during the week or once in a while to bring people in?
So, weekly events. Tuesdays, we have a board game night. I've always been an avid board gamer, and like I've actually amalgamated my collection from home into the brewery collection, because we bring out all these board games on Tuesdays. And we've actually developed a little loyal board game following. We give them a discount on like nachos and beers while they're here playing board games, and like on a Tuesday, which is normally a pretty quiet night for a brewery,
yeah,
they'll fill the place and they all come in for dinner. So that's one. And then on Thursdays, we got guys playing Magic cards coming in and drafting, because there's a new gaming store up the street from us.
Nice.
We went in with them to have a weekly event. And then Saturdays is karaoke. Our karaoke is a little unique. We call it Savage Karaoke's, hosted by the lead singer of a metal band that used to run around these parts named Savage Blade. The guy's name's Nico. It's pretty unique branded karaoke.
It's usually a lot of like ripping hard rock and metal tunes.
Yeah.
And we got a really good caliber of singers out for it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
Josh awesome. Here. Josh here rocks some great darkness tunes.
Yep.
Awesome. I'm usually not a fan of karaoke at all, but I can get behind metal karaoke and hard rock. So what are you guys doing for beers these days? I think the menu's changed up quite a bit since I was here last.
Yeah, we've really revamped our beer menu in the last year. And it kind of changes for the seasons, too. Right now, it's entering summer, so we have a lot more summery beers coming on tap. We've been wanting to experiment and try new things, usually. So, so there's some returning favorites, for sure, for the summer. But it's all kind of been in flux for the last few months, just to get it all dialed in. We did release our Big Squeezy Peach Nectarine Pale Ale about a month ago for the summer. We've had it. This is the third year we've had it. And so it's out right now. First year we did it just a one-off batch for the Caslow Jazz Fest.
Okay.
Guy I know who does the beer there was chatting with me, and we were coming up with ideas for beer, and we kind of hit on this mosaic hopped nectarine peach pale ale thing. And so we tried it, and this is really good. So we made a batch for the festival and sold it out in 10 days. So we decided, okay.
That's a good turnover.
Right? Make this it's a pretty good turnover. That's what we like to see.
Yeah.
So we decided, let's make this a big summer beer for the following year. And we made it, and it was our first beer in cans, and it did really well last year. And so now it's...
It was one of those ones where we were going to make, two or three batches last summer, and we made way too many batches.
Yeah, we made lots. Yeah, and I think we're going to crush that record this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, most likely. If the weather can hold out.
Yeah, well, that's
strange. In spring, we got all the summer weather. Now that it's the end of June, we're getting all the spring weather.
Yeah, which is great that I'm tenting right now.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens.
You picked the best week for tenting.
Yeah,
it was 30 degrees and gorgeous until right before you showed up.
Yeah, I guess I brought in the shitty weather.
Yeah, the Vancouver weather, right?
Yeah. Well, we don't get much thunder and lightning, and there is that lightning bolt on the weather report for today.
That's good.
I might have to just stay here.
That's okay. We'll shelter you, Mike. Don't worry.
Hide in my car.
Yeah. We'll set you up a cot in the brewery. It'll be fine.
So beer-wise, another beer we have that we're starting to sell a lot of that we debuted last fall, which has become one of our core beers, is our Awesome Flavor Hazy IPA. We've done a number of IPAs before, and it's definitely Josh and my favorite style of beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the hazies. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So we've done other IPAs, and we wanted to try to do... You know, pretty good take on a hazy IPA. So I think we did pretty well. It's pretty tasty.
Yeah. And it's another one that is just taken off. People always requested it. So
that's awesome.
Quite happy to keep making it.
Yeah, we brewed and canned it just a couple weeks. Well, packaged and canned it just a couple weeks ago, and it's gone.
Yeah.
Gone.
Oh, crap.
Yeah, and you're waiting for cans right now, I hear. So
yeah, waiting for cans, and then I need to get the cans filled so we can get the tanks empty so we can put more beer in the tanks and... Busy summertime.
Yeah. Ship the beer off to all the places across the province.
Yep.
Yeah, we've got huge deliveries going up pretty soon down to Vancouver area, actually.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing more down to Vancouver again.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that. We're working on it.
Yeah, no, it's been great because it used to be that you'd have to come up to Nelson to get your beer. And, slowly it's trickling out further and further.
Yep. And more regularly.
Yeah,
because that was the thing is we'd do big releases and then it would be gone and then... Be back to square one. So,
yeah, exactly. Oh, things change.
Another beer we did this winter. Actually, we paired with when we moved out of our old space. We were wondering what was going to go in there, and a coffee roastery went in. It's the second one in Nelson now that does roast their own beans and stuff like that. They're called Number 6 Coffee.
It's delicious.
It's so good. That's our regular morning coffee around here. But we met the owner because he was moving into our old space and. It didn't take long for the conversation to come up let's put some of your coffee in our beer. And we didn't want to do just a normal coffee stout.
Yeah.
So we played with the idea of a golden stout, which I just love the opposition of staring at a glass that looks like a blonde ale and then you drink it and it tastes like a stout.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
So they did a custom blend of beans for that beer. And we released it this winter called Mountain King. And that was another one that was it was here and then it was gone and then everyone was asking for it and we've decided to hold off on it for the summer and bring it back in the fall, but We'll definitely be sticking around.
That probably still sell pretty well during the summer, but there's different ones.
The squeezy, man. You just got to make more squeezy.
It's a tank space problem.
More tanks back there. That's what you need.
We do, yeah. Exactly. It's a tank space problem more than anything else, really.
Yeah. It's not a building space. It's a tank space.
Yeah.
Oh, there's room for more tanks. Oh, yeah. It's all planned out. The Mountain King is really nice beer because they did the custom roasting. I made a test batch for him. He tried it to get an idea of what we were doing, just using one of his regular roasts. And he's like, okay, thought about it. And then came up with this plan to do a custom roast that's not for drinking. It's only for flavoring the beer.
Huh.
So that's cool. Way more intense to get a lot more coffee flavor in. But then when they did the, I think it was the second batch, they made a little extra. And they had it on their espresso bar for a week. So we went up and tried it. Holy shit, man. That stuff awesome. Will knock your socks off. It's like intense and rich and just, gives you a real jolt.
When you see the size of the beer tank and then you see the quantity of coffee beans that goes into it, you're like, that's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
It's like, a very nice roasty flavor.
Not a lot of caffeine, but a lot of flavor, I'm sure.
Yeah, I know. Quite low in caffeine. Just a little bit, but not much.
Which well, is too bad. More caffeine. But stay awake, though.
We're not allowed to do that. They don't let us.
Really?
Yeah, there's restrictions. You have to get tested and everything. I know.
Fucking government.
So those of you who are listening, you missed out. Mike just kind of shrugged and looked visibly deflated for a moment when I said that.
He wants Buzz Beers.
I'm just tired. Perpetually tired. Ay, ay, ay. Well, we got the flight in front of us, so why don't we just talk about the beers here? Where do you want to start with this?
Sure. Well, we've kind of touched on three of them already, so let's kind of go back.
We'll sit and taste them a little bit. And
Let's do front to back here. Okay, so we'll start with the Big Squeezy. It's like a nice, easy drinking fruity pale. So there's some Mosaic hops in this one, a little bit of Vienna malt, a little crystal malt just for color, and to add just sort of a little backup sweetness.
Yeah.
It's the hint, right?
Looks really nice.
Yeah, and lots of peach and nectarine puree. Lots.
Yeah, it's got a really nice peach nectarine nose right on it. It's actually covering up a lot of other notes that could be there. It's just the fruit, really, I'm getting.
Yeah, the Mosaic hops have a similar profile, too, so they kind of blend in. But they're not, you really get the peach on the nose with this guy.
Yeah, it smells amazing.
It's like boozy fruit juice.
Yeah, it's nice. It's got lots of the fruit flavors. It's still got some, not really resin or anything, but it's a little dry on the dry in the mouth, even though it's fairly sweet.
Yeah, it's still beer, right? Like it's fruit, but because it's not an extract or flavoring or any added weird sweetness things or any of that.
Yeah,
it, you get like
ooh, the famous Torchlight train is going by.
Yeah,
it's our punishment for getting property next to the rail line.
Yeah, no doubt.
We're also in the building as far away as you can get from the train tracks,
and it's still quite loud.
On the patio, which is uncomfortably close if the train comes by and the engineer's not in a good mood.
I can actually see it out the front door, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, just make a drinking game out of it.
Right?
When the train whistles, you drink, right?
Well, we did have this thing we did for a little bit, but we haven't introduced the new bartenders to it, which is if you're pouring a pint while the train whistle goes, the pint's free. But only if you're actually pouring it on the first whistle.
Yeah. That makes sense, though. I like it. Yeah, it's got a very low bitterness. Really nice.
Yeah, there's a hint of bitterness there. I forget what the IBUs are, but they're
I think it's 30 IBUs.
Yeah, so pale ale territory.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to counteract the fruitiness and kind of, and the malty sweetness built some bulk to it. But
it's really nice. You can drink a lot of these. What's the ABV on this one?
5.5.
5.5?
Yeah, 5.5.
So you really can drink a lot of these. Yeah,
it's low for us. We usually have some pretty higher ones, although I'm trying to bring a few more ones in now to bring the average down.
There's been a lot of complaints about the lack of patio beers, so.
Okay, what, 11-D-1, what?
It was at one time last spring, early spring, I think it was, that just the way the schedule worked out and the lower alcohol beers moved through really fast.
Yeah.
So our tap list, and we have 20 taps here, so there's a lot of stuff on tap. The average was 7.5% alcohol.
Yeah. It's a good average.
Yeah.
I liked it.
We were enjoying it.
If they really don't like it, get some fruit juice and make a Rattler, which is probably about 4.5-5%.
Yeah, he's perfect.
An Imperial Rattler.
I used to joke about anything over 3% was an Imperial Rattler.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about doing at one point, was let's make a 5% Rattler, right?
Yeah. Well, it's like a 10%
beer cut.
Call it
half.
A double Rattler.
I think P49s is like 4.5, so it's practically there. So
yeah, we're actually doing a rally this summer for Kaslow Jazz Fest.
Nice.
Yeah, that's what they want to do this year. So we've been doing some testing and some fun ideas. It's going to be light and summery and lemon lime deliciousness. I don't know if it'll be go anywhere else, though. It might just have...
Might just be at the Jazz Fest in here.
Yeah, we'll have a few kegs here, but that's about it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's good, like if it hits, that's what I mean, if it hits, you can always do more, right?
Oh, yeah. It's just a basic beer, right, that we're making. We just, like, add stuff to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Easy enough to do. Yeah. Just.
I always laugh because I love Rattlers, and it's just like, I don't know if I want one because... Juice is so expensive. The price of Rattlers are usually pretty expensive, too.
Oh, that's the most expensive part of making one. It's more expensive to make a Rattler than it is to make beer.
Yeah,
like,
just
well,
because of fruit juice.
The fruit juices are worth a lot. Although, yeah. I'll make you a little test one of the one we're looking at when we're done here, and you can try it out.
Sounds good to me. Big fan of Rattlers still. They're just too easy to crush. They kind of remind me in some ways of the juicy IPAs.
Yeah, and it's a nice thing to
have.
They
don't bite you as hard.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's a nice thing to have, especially in summer, when you know, like, you're going to have drinks at noon, and then at 3, and then...
5,
yeah, you can have it all day, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you can have it all day, and it'll still do the job, but not too fast.
Yeah, you can still ride your bike all day. That's what they're created for, right?
Yeah, that's the idea.
Yeah, actually, our Hazy IPA, awesome flavor, it comes in at 7%, and some people are... It's too easy to crush, and we call it getting awesome, and you can tell when people are... They've gotten awesome.
Yeah. Hey, man, you're a little too awesome today.
Yeah, you're a little too awesome today.
Well, I've noticed that in general with the juicy IPAs. Like, I go down to Twin Sales in Port Moody, and you can be having a couple, and I'm like, so crushable. And fuck, that's 11%. Like, shit.
Yeah, no, I'm in trouble. Get you. Well, we make a pale ale. We're calling it a river pale ale. It's called Endless Adventure, mostly for a, like, local Kootenai release, but it's a 4.8% hazy pale ale.
Nice.
Right, so it's pretty crushable. You don't get the same punch you get with the full hazy IPAs, but it's really in that nature, in that territory, and pretty crushable.
Nice. Yeah. Good session beer.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. You got to have something that's not 7% to have a few in the sun.
All right, what's next on the rack here?
Well, next on the rack, we just touched on awesome flavor.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
Because it's hopefully pretty awesome. I think so.
This is our favorite beer, just to personally consume.
Yeah.
It is, actually. Yeah, Josh and I will order these at the park most of the time. And take hands home or whatever.
Growlers. Yeah, that is all fruit juice on the nose. Like is great.
And that's the best part of playing with those hop blends is like there is no fruit juice in there.
No, yeah,
it just smells like it.
Oh yeah, it's just hops. Although there's a lot of hops in here.
Oh yeah, no. These are like some of the most expensive beers you can make. There's the amount of hops in them.
Oh, we use cryo citra hops from as one of the hop. Like there's a bunch in there, but one is cryo citra from Yakima Chief.
Nice.
YCH, and they do this process that they keep very secret, where they just like take all the good stuff out of the hops and just compress it in the pellets that we use.
Okay.
So none of the plant matter. It's like twice as strong. It's also twice as expensive.
Isn't that some of the technology they got from pot?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, we use like pot technology all the time and with the hop stuff. Like we use CO2 hop extract, which we use for some of our like basic bittering charges for some of our beers, like our idyllic West Coast IPA, to keep the vegetal matter down in the kettle so you don't lose too much. Like, cause there's so much hops in that as well. We use bittering, like CO2 hop extract for bittering. Well, that's just like straight up pot technology.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's well, and like you know, hops and pot are the sister plants.
Oh yeah, exactly.
It's so easy.
Same
to just
genus.
Adapted, right? Yeah.
And now they're both legal in Canada,
right?
Hell yes, they are.
It's cool again.
Or maybe it's not cool now because it is legal. I don't know.
You know what? I'm a dad now, so it's cool. But I'm not the metric for cool anymore.
No.
So I think we decided it's not cool now.
Yeah, it's a little bit floral on the nose, too, but it's mostly just fruit juice.
Fruit juice.
It's got the like, floral. Yeah, the grapefruit notes.
Yeah, lots of grapefruit.
Yeah, it's really citrusy grapefruit. Bit of orange or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Orange, or is it like... tangerine or something.
It's more of a tangerine note, yeah.
I haven't had tangerine in years.
Right? It's just When's the last time you ate a raw tangerine?
Well,
never.
So, yeah. I think with tasting notes, there's like the words we use don't necessarily mean what we think they mean.
Well,
it means the same thing all the time because they'll say notes of tangerine. And we know what we mean by notes of tangerine, but like, does that actually taste like tangerine?
Well,
maybe.
You know, that the person that told you it tastes like tangerine for this beer, it's like, that tastes just like a tangerine. All right, perfect. Now I know what a tangerine tastes like.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Goes down pretty smooth, too.
Yeah, there's not a lot of bitterness. It's all the late edition hops. Little bit of like plant matter, a little bit, it's not vegetal, but you know what I mean? A little bit of hop matter in there, which you kind of expect when there's a truckload of hops in your beer.
It's gross, yeah. It's actually a hassle.
The best is when you move the beer to the conditioning tank, and then you open the valve on the bottom of the fermenter, like the yeast comes out.
Yeah.
But also all of the hops come out, and it's like lime electric green coming out. All you can smell in the whole building is just hops.
Oh, the smell travels like 100 feet around the building. Like, you can smell it everywhere. It's like bright. It smells actually better than the beer almost. Like, you get like a double hit of it. And when you hit it with the rinse water to like start cleaning the tank out, it just comes out like that electric green, like Josh was saying, like bright, vivid, intense green.
Yeah.
It's so weird that the amount of hops that go into these beers, why are they always like this yellowy or like bright orange? You'd expect it to start going a bit green.
When it goes in the tank, it's green.
Yeah.
We made a triple IPA once that came out with a green color to it.
No way.
It was 200 IBUs. And there was an alarming amount. Like, there was, not only was the beer had a like shade of green to it, but there was like pieces of hops just coming out of it.
Yeah, it was just a small.
Yeah, we did it like homebrew style, like just a pilot batch, but it was like, it was an alarming amount.
Well, it was homebrew size batch, like 5 gallon or 20 liters.
Okay, yeah.
But we ended up putting like more hops. Like, that was back when we had our small system.
Yeah.
We put more hops in than most of our beers that had like were 400 liter batches. We put more hops in this 200
batch.
20 liter batch, right?
How did it taste?
It was fucking awesome.
I loved it. I wanted to call it Jet Fuel.
Yeah, Jet Fuel. It was intense. Like, it was bitter and strong.
Yeah.
But the alcohol notes weren't crazy. Like, it wasn't too boozy. It was 10% alcohol.
You couldn't taste 10%. The booze because the hops were too strong.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah, that's it, for sure. Yeah.
I remember trying it in, like, a flight of other beers, and it was like, if you drank it out of order, that was all you were tasting for the rest of the day.
Oh, there was nothing left. Your palate's gone.
Yeah. Reminds me of Green Flash Palate Wrecker then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Which I actually used to love drinking that beer, but that was the last beer you had, because what was the point after that?
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny how IPAs have gone, too. Like, I used to be into the bitter beers, and like wasn't like we weren't trying to compete to make more bitter beers than everybody, but like 100 IBU beer was not crazy.
No,
like, it was a lot, but it wasn't like insane.
And I loved those huge, like, double IPA, those tiny resinous, like, I love those beers, but now that we have hazies, it's like almost hard to go back.
Well, and it's hard to get them now because people just keep making the hazies because they sell like crazy.
Yeah.
So they're not making those West Coasts anymore, really. Yeah. Or when they do, it's sort of a West Coast, sort of not.
I hate that halfway between. Like, if you're going to make it, just make it.
Yeah.
Just make it. If it's halfway, it's a hazy.
We still make idyllic West Coast IPA here because there's tons of craft beer fans that don't want to switch over to hazies.
Yeah.
Like, they're just so happy with that classic IPA flavor.
Well, there's still some purists out there that look at a hazy beer and think you did it wrong, unless it's a Hefeweizen. And it's like, fuck, get over yourself.
It's so funny being a small brewery that's, like, always had unfiltered beers.
Yeah.
Because our beers were always hazy, and then we got flack for that. And now, you know, in our new upgraded facility, often our beers come out crystal clear, and people are like, oh, why isn't your beer hazy? And now it's like,
yeah.
It all depends on the beer and why it's hazy, right?
Yes.
No, for sure.
And
yeah.
How it tastes. If it tastes good, just drink it.
I don't care what it looks like, as long as you're not like throwing in stupid stuff just because, like green food coloring.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, there's this stuff you can buy, which I found in like supply manuals, that's just, I forget what it's called, but it's the stuff that like makes your beer hazy.
Yeah.
On purpose. Like, so you can use like shitty lager, like clean, like clear beer making equipment, and just throw this crap in there, and it makes it look like a hazy Hefeweizen or a hazy IPA.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. That's bizarre.
Yeah.
Somebody scienced it.
Well, they always do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Right.
Speaking of green food coloring, we've definitely messed around with natural, like, flour extracts to make beer.
Actually, didn't
the pea flour, the Chinese pea flour we used, because it's like it comes out blue, and then if you add it to yellow beer, it'll turn it green.
Although there's one thing reaction with that, like if you do the wrong thing, it turns pink.
Yeah, if you add citrus.
I think at the festival, I think it was Cannery Brewing that was using that for one of their beers.
Yeah,
yeah, and it was actually really good.
We know the homebrew club in town here, and they're on a big blue beer kick right now, using that same stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Although it's more purple, really.
Yeah, it comes
depending
out
on how thin it is. Like,
yeah.
How
the vessel
much
you pour it
through.
Into. Yeah.
Ah, it's always fun to play around, though, right?
Okay. One day we'll get the green beer just right for St. Patrick's Day. It should be good.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. He's got the stare down from the staff. Yeah. Go back to work.
Hey, we're busy here.
Do something productive.
That's not going to happen.
Be as productive as we are.
Hey, we're working right now.
Exactly. This is important.
Yes, it is.
Mike, this is our job.
It is.
Yes.
Today it is our job.
One day I hope it's just a job. All right, so what's the next one we got on the flight
next
here?
Beer. This is one of our more classic beers that's kind of stuck around a little bit longer, although it's a pretty innovative one. We brought this out in 2016, I think.
I think the first batch might have been 2015, at the end of 2015.
Wow, time flies.
Yep.
Yeah.
This beer is called Noctis. It's our dark lavender hibiscus sour. At the time, it was pretty unusual. When we first tried this, we wanted to do something that we hadn't really seen before.
Yeah.
And there's very few new ideas out there. But we want to try something
in everything.
Yes. Yeah. All over. Yeah. In any sphere.
Especially movies.
Oh, God.
Don't get Craig started.
No.
He's an anti-sequelist.
Oh. Well,
anti-sequelist. There's some sequels that are good, like Empire Strikes Back or Star Trek.
Die Hard 2 was pretty good.
Die Hard 2 is pretty good. But remakes.
Terminator 2 is better than Terminator 1.
Terminator Absolutely. 2 is. Yeah. That's maybe the best sequel.
Actually, Aliens.
Oh, Aliens is great.
T2 is better. T2 is the best sci-fi action movie ever made.
Okay, I don't agree there.
That's a bold statement. Bold statement. I'm not going to disagree with you, though.
Go back and watch it. It's still
Oh, no, perfect. I do.
The T-1000 is one of the greatest movie villains of all time.
It's such a flat villain, though, but I guess actually that kind of works because it reflects whatever you want upon it back to you.
Exactly. Have you seen the new trailer for the new Terminator they're making
with
the
old
even
man,
crazier T-1000, whatever it's going to be called?
But it's not cool anymore. Like, once you have the T-1000, it's not going to be cool again.
Well, if it's crazier, that's usually worse. So more is, this actually applies to beer as well, and Josh will disagree with me in movies, that more is worse. Don't make it more nonsense. Don't make it more crazy. Don't make it more
nuts.
You can
apply the nonsense. Yeah. Small brush strokes.
Yeah, small brush strokes. That's not usually what we get.
Yeah.
Usually we get over-the-top craziness. I just watched the season 2 finale of Star Trek Discovery.
Okay, I'm not. But go ahead.
I really like Discovery.
I actually quite like it, too, except for the end.
Really?
And not the substance of what they did. The storyline was good. But there's a battle at the end, space battle, which, yeah. I mean, not weird for Star Trek. It was ridiculous. It looked like Star Wars prequel levels of nonsense.
I thought it was actually pretty good.
See? This is what I'm talking about.
Oh, great. I'm going to be working against both of you now.
Here's the real measure. Lately, they just dropped the trailer for Hobbs and Shaw, which is The Rock and Jason Statham spinoff.
Oh,
the Fast
and
Furious. If you watch the trailer, it is an 80s action movie with an unlimited budget.
Yes.
Done modern. I'm so excited. It looks ridiculous, and I'm totally okay with that.
See,
because they've just embraced it. They're like, yeah, let's just do, like, they just take a car, and they're like, what's the stupidest thing we can do with this car? And I'm like, I want to see.
I'm going to say, I think it looks awful, but I want to see
it. In the best way.
It does look awful, but
right?
Yeah.
It's like when they did Fast 7, and they're like, we're going to drive this car from one building to another, like one skyscraper to another. And I was like, yeah, I'm in. Let's see it. Show me it.
Or the Expendables movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's get every action star from the 80s, put them in one movie with no plot.
That was a great idea. If they had put a plot in that movie, it would have ruined it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because that is an homage to those, like, commando 80s action
Predator.
Movies. Yeah. Yeah. I love those movies.
When there's too much action on screen, and the characters aren't supposed to be actual movie characters. They're supposed to be the characters. Like, Stallone's not really supposed to be whatever his name is in that movie. I mean, a certain degree, but mostly he's supposed to just be Stallone.
Yeah. And Schwarzenegger's the same way.
What was the which one was it that Schwarzenegger's like, I'll be back, and then Bruce Willis is like, no, I'll be back.
That's the second one.
Yeah. Where he's like, you're always back. It's been a while since I've seen it.
Right.
How do we get off on this tangent again?
I remember we were talking about Noctis, and then we got completely off track.
So Noctis is Latin for midnight.
Ooh.
There you go.
And so it's a darker beer.
It's a dark beer. But it's not a roasty dark beer. It's a light dark beer.
Yeah, so that was one of the things about trying to make it unique and different at the time is we did a cold grain infusion. So we took the dark grain in a separate tank and you infused it in cold water overnight. And then you added it to the beer after the actual brew process was done.
I'm going to be honest right now, though. This batch, I didn't do that. We were really busy and I didn't have time.
Behind the scenes.
Shh, don't tell anybody.
Did it change the flavor much?
It did slightly, not much. You'll taste it, and you'll get a little more roastiness than we did before. I think I'll go back to the original method. I've been talking about trying this for a couple... Yeah, this winter.
So what are you talking about? It'll be like a behind-the-scenes brewing show, and we'll call it Time Crunch.
Yeah.
That's really what life's like.
Yes.
We'll try it, but...
Time Crunch and What is Money? Subtitle.
Yeah, exactly.
Bills are important.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's a hint of roastiness to it, a little more than originally, but it's pretty close. There's some floral notes because there's hibiscus, lavender in there. It's lightly sour, and the key with this one is, like, it's sour, but it's not crazy sour.
Yeah,
like, there's some sours that go way overboard or really intense, which is what they're going for, I think.
Yeah, like the Cascade Barrel House in Portland.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you drink a... They used to be 750s. I think they're smaller now. Drink one of those yourself, and you just feel like garbage, and you need like a bottle of Tums.
And that was one of the things. That was one of the
tastes great, but
well, yeah, that was one of the things we always found with sour beers. It's like even doing tastings with them, it's like I just heartburn or yeah. Like, yeah, I've never enjoyed that like hyper sour thing that you can get from some sour beers.
I go to the Farmhouse Fest every year at UBC, and it's all farmhouse beers and sours, and I bring Tums with me.
Yeah,
that's a good plan.
Yes.
That's a great plan. I like to taste some of those beers, but I can't drink too much of them. I think that just depends on your propensity for heartburn, too. Like, some people are probably fine with it.
But yeah, I get lots of heartburn these days. Skinny God, people. Getting older sucks.
Getting older and drinking lots of beer makes it even worse.
Don't say those words. It's got nothing to do with the beer.
Sacrilege.
It's all the older part.
Yeah.
It's all the older part, yeah definitely. Yeah. Which will affect us all eventually.
Yes. Yeah, it's got a really nice nose. I don't know what the frig hibiscus smells like, but I can just assume it's that.
That's the fun part.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to know.
But I've never actually gone like, hey, that's a hibiscus.
Yeah, it's almost better not to do that.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, because some beers, and this one in particular, like there's floral notes to it, there's hibiscus, there's lavender, but it's not a huge overbearing part of it.
Yeah, I know for sure.
Whereas like with the Big Squeezy, there's like... stone fruit, peaches, nectarines in it, like a lot.
Yeah,
bam, big. That's what you're getting. This is it's more about the whole melange of the different things happening at the same time, right?
Yeah, so
you get the hint of the roasted notes from the grain, you get the sourness and the floral notes and a little bit of hops in there as well to all kind of come up with one flavor that is something on its own.
And I mean, like, just the nose itself, it's just kind of floral and fruity, and I can't pick out what it is exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it smells really nice.
This is one of those ones where label design came into, what do you want to put on the label for a description? And we were like, nothing. It says dark and mysterious on purpose.
Exactly.
I actually don't like when people put style names next to this.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, our staff actually do a lot to like try and explain to people, but I'd rather just say knock this and have no explanation whatsoever.
Makes sense, yeah. Yeah, it's very, very, very mildly tart.
Yes.
Like this, if you call this a sour beer, a lot of people might be like, really? Because you can give this to almost anyone and they won't go, oh, your beer's sour, right?
Yeah.
Like, people that don't know sour beer get scared by sour beer.
What it really does is just gives it a really nice dry finish.
Yeah.
Instead of, just overbearingly sour.
Yeah, it's got like a sour note that you would get from like orange juice. Like nothing more than that.
Yeah, exactly.
I was hanging out with some winemaker friends in the Okanagan, and the one guy, he's very much into very tart wines.
Okay.
So we were sitting there at his house drinking a bunch of wine, and then brought out some Noctis, which when you're drinking beers, especially if you go from like, something malty or like a hazy IPA, which got lots of body, to Noctis, it tastes dry and tart. Mm-hmm. When you go from a tart wine to Noctis, though, it tastes like syrupy and sweet. When you have that quick contrast, it was really weird because we went from like super tart red wine to, bam, this beer. Because it's he loves this beer.
Yeah. I might have to try a super tart wine because I might not hate it. Not a wine guy.
That's fair. That's fair.
But yeah, no, this is really nice. Even on the flavor, like it's got kind of a general fruity note that I can't really pick out. Kind of floral.
Yeah, again,
mildly tart.
It's a combination, right?
Yeah, I can't explain exactly what it is because I've never chomped on hibiscus.
Perfect.
Yeah,
that's exactly what we were going.
It is for. Dark and mysterious.
Exactly,
but it's really tasty, and there is a bit of roast, like you said.
Yeah, and most batches have a hint less than that.
Yeah,
but I mean, we're talking like a 98% of where it normally is.
So basically, only you would notice.
Yes, only. Yeah. Yeah, most we have a lot of regulars who love this beer. No one said anything yet. I actually tried to just put this beer off for the summer because, again, we're really busy. Like, some of the other beers are super popular and large volume. So we're trying to get those out. I'm like, you know what? I've made this beer for a long time. Let's just let it rest for the summer.
Yeah.
And, like, see how it is. We said that one day.
There was almost a riot. It was a real problem.
For the next 2 weeks, every single day, someone bothered me about it. Not just here at the brewery. I was in Penticton, the beer festival. People were like, where's the Noctis? People asked me about it, like, literally every day. Even on days I was off, I have to run someone.
Yeah.
And so we just decided, you know what? Okay, we'll just make it again.
One more batch for the summer.
Although it's selling fast enough, I have to make more.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and schedule it in.
Oh, my. Time for more tanks.
Yes.
Yeah, desperately.
You could always go back to your old school tanks, the style, but...
Just put a bunch of tiny tanks in the brewery?
Yeah.
That's so much work.
It is.
You know, you could try to get a big version.
We'll get there. There's room. We just gotta get the time to get a mortar and get them in here.
And that money thing. Like, what's money again?
Yeah, no. We don't talk about that here.
That's what banks are for, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure someone worries about that part.
The problem with this building, too, is putting tanks. Like, we have the room in the back for them, but getting them to the back and up is a bit of a logistical game.
How do you have to get them in? Is it through the front door? Or?
I come to the cargo bay and then all the way around back.
Oh, okay.
Which is on the patio. So we have, like, this raised walkway in front of the brewery that you have to sling the tanks onto over these stairs onto a carrier and then move it through... like a garage door, and through the building, and through this other doorway, and then into the
around
building.
A corner, which around is a always corner. A problem.
When we brought the mash tun in when we were first building it, it cleared by half an inch.
Oh, jeez.
On all three sides.
Hey, well, Ripley Stainless, they asked how big is the door we're going through, and I told them, and they made it work.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time to rip this wall out on the side and put a roll-up door.
I wish.
If only, right?
This is one of those old buildings where all the walls are cinder block.
Yeah, so. And it's probably protected somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the newer buildings in Nelson, downtown area, actually, so.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah.
That doesn't mean it's new.
Yeah,
It just means it's not really old.
Yeah, what the hell was it saying when I drove into Nelson? How old is this bloody city again? It's pretty old.
Extremely,
1897 is when it was turned into a city.
Yeah.
It was the second largest city in BC at one point. After New Westminster.
Yep.
Yeah, which was the capital
originally. Which was the capital. And that was when Victoria wasn't part of BC. It was its own colony.
Yes. Crazy times.
They still act like that sometimes.
Yes, they do. It's okay. We keep that straight between us.
It's a little cultural superiority when you go over there. They're like, oh, you're not from the island.
Yes.
And we're here just up in the mountains wondering what everybody down near the ocean is talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
What's an ocean?
I saw that once. It smelled funny.
Yes, it did. Man, the weather's changing out there.
It's getting better.
Kootenai weather, especially in June, it's random. You will have beautiful sunshine, 35 degrees.
There's that.
And pouring rain.
It's that...
at the same time.
Same time.
It's that it's that dad quote that's always been around Nelson. If you don't like the Kootenai weather, just wait 5 minutes.
It's basically the same as Vancouver. Yeah.
Our brewery's on a corner. So, like, before you've looked out this window looking onto the front street, and it has been pouring rain. I mean, like, pouring rain, rain clouds like what's moving in right now.
Yeah.
And you look out onto Hall Street on the other side, and it was sunny and beautiful and wonderful.
Yeah. Crazy mountains. All right. What's the last one in the flight we got here?
So the last one is the one we talked about first, actually. It's the fifth anniversary. It's Norwegian farmhouse Maltol, brewed with Kvik yeast, raw ale, as I was describing at the beginning of the podcast, and all the crazy brewing techniques that went into it. It's only just over a week old at this point.
Yeah,
it was a week old when we bottled it for our anniversary party this past Saturday. So
yes.
Yeah, it's interesting. Try it. There's some unusual flavors in here.
It's got a really interesting nose.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Like, it's got kind of a sweet, almost candied fruit nose.
I'm still trying to figure out where those flavors and aromas are coming from.
The yeast.
The yeast makes a lot of it. And also the mash temperature. To pasteurize the beer and to just follow the traditional practices, you mash and mix all the grain with hot water at a very high temperature, much higher than what we normally do. Was it 75 is what we got up to?
Yeah.
Which is like 10 degrees high. Usually we're doing between 62 and 64,
yeah.
68 sometimes for like our high gravity, like our hazy IPA is like 68 degrees Celsius. This is 75. And
pretty freaking hot, yeah.
Conventional wisdom says you shouldn't get as much out of it, but it works perfectly fine.
And you want to keep it hot, too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you start hot and keep it hot.
Kvik was fermenting it, like, well, it's fermenting with another batch, a different beer at 38 degrees right now, which is a little...
And it is bubbling like crazy. It's fermenting like mad.
It's alarming, like, being in a brewery for so long and getting used to so many things, and one of them is, like... You know, the tanks are cool because they're sitting at 18 degrees or whatever. And now you touch that one and it's like, oh my God, what's going on in there?
Yeah.
Oh, it's warm. It's really weird.
Are we killing our beer? Right? Like, what's going on?
We were brewing this new Kvik beer yesterday and we racked it into the fermenter with all the yeast, which was from the anniversary. Which we used to kind of grow the yeast up to the right size to a full scale batch of the new beer we're doing. And like we had finished, we just finished cleaning up and... Jade, one of our brewers, walked over and like looked at the sight glass on the tank. Like, it's bubbling. You could see the bubbles in the action in the
sight glass.
In the sight glass of the tank. And it had been in the tank for 20 minutes.
Yeah. It was already aggressively fermenting.
And by the end of the day, when we were finally done cleaning up, like it had been in the tank for an hour at that point. There was pressure in the tank. Like, it was bubbling. It was fermenting already. It hadn't bubbled aggressively, but it had started to do all of its work. Come into this morning. And it smells like banana bread in the brewery.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Which, for a lot of beers, like if you're making a conventional ale or lager, that's not a good smell.
Yeah, no.
But we're doing a farmhouse, interesting Kvik Norwegian thing.
Yeah.
That's just exciting and fun times.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, after all this, it may not even smell or taste like that either.
I probably have no idea what it's going to taste like. Yeah. This is a new experimental beer for us. We're doing, it's called Rhubarbarian. It's going to be a strawberry, raspberry, rhubarb Kvik. Fermented beer. Yeah.
I'm bummed that it's going to be ready after I leave.
Not much, though, considering how fast
that's
this stuff works.
Yeah. I'm going to be gone. And, hey, look what's ready.
We'll send you some. It's going to go in cans, too, I think. So.
Yeah.
But actually, yeah, this is. The nose is just so interesting.
The anniversary ale, the fifth, the farmhouse one. And the flavor, too.
Yeah.
Like, the nose is interesting, and then you get the juniper. The spruce really comes through.
That's the one thing that surprised me when I first tried it, is like that spruce flavor is just there immediately.
Definitely. But then it's got like some like pineapple and banana going on too.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least. I think that's a lot of the fermentation profile of the Kvik yeast.
I think so, yeah. That's really interesting. What's the ABV of this one?
6%.
6%, yeah.
Ish.
I'm not tasting any of the alcohol at all. It's super, super crushable, this one too.
Yeah. Yeah,
dangerously so, I think. Like it's
and
surprisingly so. I thought we would get something good,
and
something interesting, but I was pleasantly surprised by how tasty and enjoyable this beer is.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Which was fun, and like during the anniversary party, people were coming in, and you know, we get a lot of people coming here just for the blonde ale or just for the amber ale, and they're not really interested in trying things like Noctis or the super hazy IPA or whatever. And, you know, fifth anniversary, get them to try the fifth anniversary beer, and, like, tons of them were just immediately on it, like, oh, this is super interesting and different, and then super crushable, like you said.
Yeah. This is nice. Very worthy of an anniversary beer.
perfect.
I'm glad. Yeah, I was a little worried at one point when we were like pouring buckets of stuff through the door of the fermenter. I'm like, is this going to work? I have no idea.
Nice.
Well, I might as well talk about it too. You're now making a lager.
We are. Yeah, we're bringing it actually right now.
It's you know, I don't care about yellow fizzy lagers, and a lot of people know that, mm-hmm. but it can be a great thing for a brewery. So can you tell me a little bit about your lager that you're producing now?
Sure. It's called Level Up Lager. It's based on a Munich Helles lager. A little bit of a variation, though. Pretty simple, pretty light, pretty easy drinking. But we basically wanted to make a boring fizzy yellow beer that wasn't just a boring fizzy yellow beer, but was easy to access for people who are used to those.
Yeah.
And would fill those roles. Like, I'm not a lager fan. Like, I don't care about those beers. But I found myself going back to that beer more and more since we put the first batch on tap, when I feel like just something easy to drink and pleasant, not too strong, not too rich, but also not too flavorful, but like still have some interesting flavor. So yeah. It's kind of a nice thing. It's been actually pretty fun to make. Although we're doing a step mash with it, which is where you, when you're making the beer, you mix all the grains together with hot water and you change the temperature three times as you go up. It's a real pain in the ass.
Yeah, one of the things, I mean, yeah, we're making a lager now, and look at it. It took 5 years for us to come around to it, right? And that was also just part of our, you know, brewery personality of, like, always doing new and interesting and this and that. And we're taking a step back now and doing this yellow fizzy beer. And that also just comes with having our own lounge here. It's like just people coming in and bringing their friends who aren't necessarily these big craft beer fans. And
yeah.
The first question is like, what do you have on tap that tastes like XYB macro lager? And you're like, for a long time, you have to try and convince them to drink a blonde ale. And then even then, they're like, well, this doesn't taste like a lager. And you're like, I know.
That's because it's not a lager.
There is a lot of breweries that just say, here's a water.
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's fun.
One of the main things I wanted to avoid if we were going to make a lager was that pitfall, I think, that a lot of even craft breweries now, when they do make a lager, is it's really easy to get a big sulfur note in your lager. And
yep.
that fart flavor, man, I can't do it. That's what drives me away from lagers. It's like that. I find often if somebody cracks a can near you, you can immediately smell it.
And that's not a good smell.
No, and you're like, oh, that smells like fart beer. Yeah.
Did you fart or just open a Molson's?
Right?
Exactly.
Or any other macro lager beer.
Yeah, exactly.
Insert macro here.
I guess we should insert the one that's from the Kootenays. But
nah, they don't make it here anymore either. Anyways.
Is that you?
That brewery's still there in Creston, isn't it?
Oftentimes, if you get a package when it comes from Edmonton or...
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I would have thought that it would be... For BC, it would still come out of here.
Well, that brewery makes a lot of other beers, right?
It's true.
Make Kootenay,
yeah.
And they make Keith, and
the dreaded Budweiser.
Yes.
Wah, wah. I guess I don't want to forget either. You guys don't just make beer. What do you have going with your soda program right now?
Actually, we're trying some fun things right now.
Yeah, one of the things a lot of people don't know about our soda program because it's only been on draft here because we haven't done a lot of preservative testing in the past, which we are doing now because we are looking at packaging and distributing it. Because that's one of the biggest hurdles to get over with soda. It's just preserving it.
Yeah, you want to make sure it doesn't ferment in the can and blow up. or turn into alcohol, which happened with one of our early tests.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
It's like, ooh, this ginger beer is like dry and delicious and it's fantastic and like definitely, definitely alcoholic. You have to avoid those
things.
Move
that to the other board then, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, totally. It was actually really good. But
so the standards that we keep around are we do a real sarsaparilla root beer. Which actually disappeared off the tap for a long time because we couldn't get our hands on any sarsaparilla, and then we didn't want to put a root beer on tap that wasn't the sarsaparilla root beer. And then our juniper ginger beer, which is a favorite around here to go into cocktails as well, like gin and gingers and stuff like that.
Yeah. I was here last night for a little bit, and actually there was a cocktail made, so.
Yeah.
We have some pretty cool cocktails on our place.
We should talk about that too, then.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next. And then, recently we've thrown some shrubs on, which is these strange... Well, I'll let Craig explain.
Yeah, shrubs, it's a... I don't know it that well, honestly. It's an apple cider vinegar drink. It's actually quite interesting. Like, you make a syrup with apple cider vinegar and sugar and a bunch of other flavorings, fruit flavoring stuff. You do a blueberry and a ginger.
Or a raspberry one.
That's a health drink.
It's a health drink that's also, it's pretty tasty. When we first heard about the idea, I was like, I don't know about this whole apple cider vinegar thing. And then I tried it. I'm like, oh, that's actually pretty tasty.
Yeah.
And you get a hint of that. But, like, it kind of comes across more like a sour beer where you get, like, a hint of that, like, nice tartness and almost a fruity tartness. It kind of melds nicely.
Nice.
Although, I think my new favorite and a lot of the staff's new favorite is this a new soda we came up with a couple months ago. It's a coffee cream soda.
Ooh.
Number Six Coffee that we were talking about with the Mountain King Stout, we work with them too to do this, or we use some of their coffee and make a cream soda out of it. It's so good.
I'm not a cream soda fan, but I do want to try that. Yeah. Like, that sounds interesting.
It's not what you think about. It's like
caramelly
vanilla coffee deliciousness.
Yeah,
I could get behind that. I don't think you have that on tap right now, though, do you?
We do not.
No, we're having vanilla supply problems, but we're working on it.
The world is having vanilla supply problems.
The world is. We also just priced out a 55-gallon drum of vanilla. If we ever move up to, like, full-scale production, it's, like, 25 grand.
Oh, Jesus.
It's alarming.
That's a problem. We can't have one of those. That's too much money.
No, that's it. That one will stay in-house then, probably. Wow. That's a lot of money.
I know, right?
For one drum. Crazy? One drum of vanilla.
How far would that one drum go?
A ways.
Yeah, I would do a lot. We don't need that much. Oh, okay. I forget what the content is for the thing, but we need like gallons of it, vanilla extract, but not 55 gallons of it. So,
still, that'd be in a very expensive pop then.
$200 a can,
but so worth it. Not at all. No.
That one you better actually add to spirits or something,
right?
Yeah. Not going to make enough money otherwise. Get your distilling license, then do that.
Yeah.
One day, maybe.
I was trying to think. We've done a lot of, especially in the summer, we do a lot of classic fruit sodas, like an orange, peach, mango.
Yeah.
Just something really light and fruity. Same thing, it goes really well at the bar here with, like, gin or...
Yeah.
Because we don't, at our bar here, we don't do any, like, packaged sodas. Like, we don't have Coca-Cola or Pepsi or anything you can buy off a store shelf.
Yeah.
It's stuff we make here.
Yeah, everything's in-house, pretty much.
And even with our boozes, we try and only buy BC craft boozes. It's really hard with whiskey
because
you can't find any BC craft whiskey.
There's not a lot. Tucker City makes some. There's a couple.
It's out there, but it's hard to get in quantity. And especially, we're in the Kootenays, so we don't have quite as much supply access as maybe down the coast.
But gins and vodkas.
Gins and vodkas, for sure. Definitely. And whatever we can get, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, rum, you can't get craft rum in BC at all.
You can.
You can?
Tucker City makes one now.
Oh, Central City, of course, Central City. Yeah.
Because I forget what it is. I think they produce too much. They aren't considered a craft distiller for the for the tax breaks. So they don't have to follow that 100% BC grown sugar.
Which solves all the problems with a lot of things.
Yes.
That rule is actually pretty restrictive.
I understand why they're doing it, because you're trying to support locals, BC growers.
Yeah.
But you're not a lot of sugar beets. And there is no sugarcane being grown in BC. So if you want to make a spirit, you basically have to say, I don't want to be this small batch distiller anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Central City is really well positioned to do that.
Yeah, because they are quite large.
Yeah.
I only tried a little bit. It's not my kind of rum, really, but I prefer like a dark spice rum. So
Fair enough.
Me
fair
too.
Enough.
And so that just leads into... at our lounge here, we do have a cocktail menu. This is our summer cocktail menu, which we actually just launched a week or two ago.
Nice.
I don't think there's, one of our favorite things to do here is name beers. It's my favorite activity. But naming cocktails is even more absurd. One of the things I like about it is the name doesn't have to have anything to do with what's actually in the cocktail.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So some of ours here, Bittersweet Symphony.
Nice.
Nobody Tosses a Dwarf, which the cocktail itself is a blueberry gimlet. And as soon as somebody said the word gimlet to me, I was Gimli. And then now that spiraled into that.
It's all about word association. The meetings on these naming things are the best, because it's usually at the end of the day when everyone's feeling ready to go home. So it's like time to relax and kind of think about something else.
Yeah.
Over a drink is even better.
Yeah.
And just get everybody kind of riffing, and anybody who wants to join in can join in.
Yeah.
Kind of start riffing and joking around and come up with the more ridiculous things possible, and usually get some really good nuggets of goodness out of it.
Well, and the beauty there, too, is that these are cocktails served only in the lounge, so there's none of the rules about trademark and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to worry that there's been 1,500 beers named that same thing.
Oh, yes.
That's a real hassle with beer names. Yes. You can come up with the best idea ever and Google it, like, oh, great, somebody in somewhere did it. Great, awesome.
Three times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, we got Fresh Prince, which is actually my favorite one.
Josh, you skipped one.
Oh, sorry. Be Kissed in a Meadow, which is a honey one.
Ooh.
So that's my favorite name.
Be Kissed in a Meadow.
And it's my favorite name of cocktail because Josh doesn't like it.
I despise it.
And that means it's the best.
Nice.
Despise it. Fresh Prince is actually my favorite one on right now. It's a gin, grapefruit, lime cocktail. Those are all my favorite flavors.
Okay.
Next is Hot Bub Time Machine, which actually has floating pink peppercorns in it.
Oh.
They float like bubbles.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Passion Party. I don't know what's going on there, but it sounds dirty.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I believe Passion Parties are a sex toy selling party.
Oh, see there? I knew it was dirty. And then the last one is Lululemon.
Lululemon. Nice.
Which, of course, we will see no lawsuits about.
Because it's in-house only.
That's right.
Yes. I guess also we should talk about your food menu, too, because I think it's changed since I was here last. And for people that don't live in the Kootenays, one of the good reasons to come to a place is beer or sodas or whatever and food. So.
And that was actually the biggest change for us from the beginning. Because Craig and I, you know, we've always been beer guys. But our menu change has come from, you know, changing the people that work in our kitchen. And they're bringing their ideas to the table because we only have this vision of what we wanted the lounge to feel like.
Yeah.
And our kitchen is actually just limited based on the equipment and size because it's tiny compared to the rest of the building.
Yes, it is.
So, this past year we brought another guy on board. His name's Lane. He's a good friend of mine. I've known him since we were probably 11 years old.
Oh, jeez.
And he was finally moving home, and I immediately wanted him on board because he's like a comfort food expert, I think.
He's uniquely talented for comfort food and delicious food.
That's the kind of food I enjoy.
So we went from
I think it shows.
we'll have lunch after this, right?
I think so.
We'll definitely have lunch. We went from a single page snack menu to a full 3-page like food menu.
That's
which
awesome.
Anyone who knows kitchens and like they see the kitchen that our guys have to work out of, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
It really got the short end of the design like
space
and budget when we did the construction.
Yes.
Because I did a lot of that, so it was like, okay, well we need more brewing stuff and I need more brewing space, so and we need more lab space. So kitchen get crammed in here.
The kitchen broke everything you bought them, so that's sort of on
a sore point. We shouldn't talk about that. It gets me really upset. I get them something cool, then they break it, then I have to fix it again. It's my problem.
Yes.
Infuriating.
Yeah, we'll go over a couple quick highlights. One of the things that has become hugely popular here is our hand pies.
Nice.
So we do steak and gravy, spicy chicken, baked brie. We do a couple vegan options, cashew pate, which is mushroom and cashew cheese. A butternut squash and a potato masala. You buy them in like pairs, and people love them because you can take them to go, or they come in and it's just this nice snack that goes along with beer really well.
Yeah. The naming game with the cocktails and the beers also comes into the food menu. We like to have fun with it, and it's in-house. And we're a brewery, not like a family restaurant, so we can push the envelope a little bit. And one thing we worked on when we did our new menu was like making really good nachos. And our nachos are pretty killer, I think.
Yeah.
You know, they're like real classic delicious nachos. We also came up with this idea, like, maybe we should make them big. Like, really fucking big. Like, big enough for, like, you know, the three of us and maybe one or two other people.
Yeah.
And we're some hungry people to fill us up.
Yeah.
And so we put, like, well, how big are they? Well, they're really fucking big. So on the menu, the item we have is big fucking nachos.
Nice.
And they are really quite enormous.
If you sit at one of our 4-seat tall tables and somebody brings out a big fucking nachos, there is barely enough room for 4 beer glasses on the table.
That's awesome.
That's it.
That's really awesome.
And some people do complain about the name, but like there's like 3 or 4 people who complained, like, ooh, that's inappropriate. And most people think it's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, you know, breweries are welcome to all until a certain time. I think I saw on your door it's like 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock.
Yeah, it's 8 o'clock here.
But at the same time, it's still an adult-oriented place.
Yeah, we don't have play space for kids.
No.
Like, it's one of those things where if you want to bring your kid to the brewery, that's fine.
Yeah.
But it's not designed for them.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're going for.
They're welcome because if it can be the new coffee shop where parents can bring their kid and everyone can enjoy a beer, awesome.
Yeah.
But you do realize it's still a brewery.
Yeah.
I think a lot of parents actually appreciate that. Not being a parent myself, I don't know for sure. But like, yeah.
Me neither.
Anecdotally, it seems like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where, because it's an adult space that you can go to, but still bring your children. So you can kind of have the best of both worlds in a way.
Well, I love it. Like, one of my co-hosts, Steve, is a father. And it's great that you can still go to breweries and still have a couple beers. And his daughter can still come.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I know there's certain places in the U.S. where that's not a thing.
Well, and that's one of the big benefits of having our own sodas on tap is, you know, like, the kids love to come in and have a root beer. Like, even my son loves a root beer. It's his favorite thing in the world.
One hilarious thing about the root beer, though, is it looks a lot like a, you know.
Like a beer?
Pale ale. Like, there's a nice foamy head on it. It's like a rich amber color.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in your defense, then, I think, like, A&W's root beer or whatever has that nice foamy head, too.
So. Oh, totally. But we put them in, like, sometimes the same glass, so like, it looks like this is, like, 7-year-old kid sitting there with, like, a nice glass of stout.
I try and always put ice in it just to differentiate the fact that it is not actually a beer.
Good call. Good call. You should get, like, different branded glasses that say soda.
Right?
That's actually not a bad idea.
An expensive idea, I'm sure, but not a bad idea.
Yeah, one of the other things we tried to do with our menu design is put at least one joke on every page. Just to give people a little treat as they're reading it.
Yeah. Are they dad jokes, though?
No, I think that sometimes they're dirty jokes.
They're too dirty for dad jokes.
Yeah.
So should we go through them or should we just...
Oh, just like hitting on highlights, like, you know, those, like, we got snacks.
The spinach dip is the highlight, for sure.
On the first page, yeah.
Yeah, the spinach dip. Spinach artichoke dip.
Yeah.
It's called Artichoke Me Daddy.
Nice.
Which gets the best reaction when you're working on the bar and somebody comes up to order it, because they look at you dead in the eye and they go, I want the spinach dip. And you just look right back and you're like, which one?
Nice.
It gets even better once you realize, like, in the back and the things that a lot of the staff have started calling Elaine, who runs the kitchen, started calling him Daddy.
That's awesome.
Which he'd hate me to say on a podcast, but I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. That is even better.
Yeah, second page here, we got some salads and bowls, and, you know, we threw the classic big healthy salad on there, the garden variety salad. It's got all the good stuff in it.
Yeah.
And then right underneath is the tater tot salad. And nice. That's in quotation marks on purpose.
Yes. It's technically a salad. There's a lot of vegetables in it and some dressing.
And also some bacon.
Ooh.
And mostly tater tots.
And one of the other things we actually got a lot of recognition for is we do mac and cheese bowls.
Ooh.
And, yeah, like our bacon jalapeno mac is my favorite.
That sounds really good.
Really unreal.
That one's pretty tasty.
And the last page here, we got sandwiches, wraps, and we do a bunch of, like, you know, sort of gourmet hot dogs. We do them with a local company here, Legendary Meats.
Okay.
And they make the dogs with our beer specifically for us. So on the section on the menu here, we call them Legendary Wieners.
Because they're wieners made by Legendary Meats.
That's awesome.
That's not a joke at all.
And,
but they are legendary wieners. Yes.
We knew we had to have a vegan option for a wrap on there, so we got this, you know, it's this rice noodle wrap. It's got some veggies in it and stuff, so we called it the Tasteful Nudes Wrap.
Nice, nice.
Yeah. And then we smoke all our own pulled pork and bacon here, which is sort of the big highlight on the menus. Our bacon's got a bit of a reputation in town.
Well, when I arrived here, you had the smoker out there, and it smelled bloody amazing.
Yeah.
It's pretty good bacon. Yeah.
Yeah, we try not to brag about it, but it's pretty damn good.
Yeah, just toot your horn just like the train does. Just,
yeah, exactly. Or the traffic going by on the other side of it.
Yeah, no shit. Yeah. There's traffic on 3 or 4 sides, is it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But who noticed?
Hopefully it wasn't too loud.
No. Anything else you want to cover here? I guess you got arcade games, too, actually.
Yeah, actually,
was couple
a,
of them.
A buddy of mine, Mike, he collects and restores old arcade games. So we just cut a deal with him, and he brought down... originally, we just had Mortal Kombat 2 and Gyrus, which was one of my favorites. And then I heard he'd got his hands on four-player WrestleFest WWF, and he was trying to get it to another bar nearby, and I, like, jumped all over him. I'm like, no.
Yeah, no doubt.
I want that down here. Four-player, it's so absurd.
We had a tag team tournament.
Nice.
A couple weeks ago. It was pretty fun.
There was, like, 20 people watching and screaming at the screen. Like, just like you'd expect wrestling fans would. But, like, these people were not prepared for it. And then when it was happening, there was just yelling going on.
That's hilarious.
That actually reminds me of something we didn't mention for our anniversary party we had last Saturday. We have Josh and one of our friends, George, have this rivalry over Jenga, giant Jenga.
Okay.
So, like, 2x4 Jenga. So the thing's, like, 6 feet high to start with. And they had this epic match again for the second year in a row in the middle of the brewery. I'm not kidding when I say there was 30 people in a giant circle surrounding this with cheers and yelling. It was like a sporting event.
Yeah.
It was actually a problem. It was like getting in the way of the bar. People couldn't get drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a pretty epic event.
We got a reputation for it now because it was like 2 years ago at the Nelson Oktoberfest. Nice. They had this Jenga thing out. And George and I were both there. And we're like, oh, let's play a game of Jenga. And same thing, like, we took it so seriously and got so tall that people started watching it. And then right at the end, when it was my turn, another friend of ours hip-checked the table on purpose and knocked it over.
It was hilarious.
So George got the title, and I was furious.
No shit. I would be, too.
So it became this running joke where I wouldn't let it go, right? Every time I'd bug George, I'm like, I'm going to come for you. I'm coming for that title. So then the next year, we had our fourth anniversary party, and we set up the Jenga table, and George beat me legit. So then it was like, I was pretty crushed. I'm like, oh, man. So then I knew we were doing it again this year. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to get the Jenga table out again. And so George and I were like, we set it up. The only kind of space we could find was like sort of near the bar. It's like right in the middle of the room. And I'm like, no, at that time, nobody's paying attention to us, right?
Yeah.
We set up the Jenga tower. We started playing. And I'm like, he's like, well, how do you want to do this? I'm like, well, let's do a warm-up match. You know, it's been a year. Like, neither of us have played in a year. Like, let's do a warm-up match. And 5 moves in, the entire bar has stopped what they're doing and they're just watching us. And then we just handshake. We're like, okay, this is legit now.
Yeah.
And
this was tense, serious business. Like, I can't actually explain this enough. Like, you could hear a pin drop in this place with
nice.
70 people in it at one point.
Yeah.
As these things were being pulled out and like they were testing it and all the
And then you'd get the block out and the tower would waver and everyone in the room would go, oh,
yeah.
Yeah, but this year, the tower fell on George's turn. It was finally time for me to get the belt back.
You redeemed yourself.
Yes. Yeah. So I got
set yourself up for a great rematch next year.
Yes, exactly.
Nice.
Become a bit of a Torchlight event. Actually, one of the things that happens at our anniversary party is a friend of ours a couple years ago made us a cast iron giant torch. I don't know if you can see it there on the wall.
Yes.
Just on the left.
On the corner.
So,
you had that for your grand opening party, right?
Yes. So grand opening and then anniversary ever since then, we light it with a bagpiper during the ceremony. We walk it through the bar, which I'm always nervous about because it's giving off a lot of smoke and there's a lot of smoke detectors. So I have to walk sort of quickly, but not too quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
And bagpipes inside are quite loud.
Yes, yes they are. Yeah.
It's a little alarming for people who are not expecting it.
Worth it, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
You might as well be known for something.
I'd love being known for absurdity. That's okay with me.
And I mean, if the smoke alarm goes off, just tell the bagpiper to keep going.
Yeah, it'll just drown it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, should we have lunch?
I think so, yeah. Well, let's close this out. Before we close it out, I'd like to shout out to our Patreon supporters. We've got Liz from Hop Bower. We've got Indie Beer Show out of San Diego and Steve. So if you want to find us on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/Pacific Beer Chat. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for tuning in to Pacific Beer Chat. We can be found on all podcast apps as well as at pacificbeerchat.com. If you find a podcast app we are missing on, let us know and we'll endeavor to fix that. Leave us a review on iTunes as it helps expose more people to the show. You can email us at feedback@pacificbeerchat.com. We can be found on all major social media apps at Pacific Beer Chat. Logo design was by Tim, the craft beer tourist. Audio editing done by Cam, known as Cam on Tap on Twitter. To play us out, here is a clip of the song Lothian by the band Conundrum, performed by Kevin Ems. Find them at conundrum-music.bandcamp.com. The song that plays us out is part of our intro.